I'm Ann Kalmuller. This is WGN Radio. Very excited to have the legend, the poet, just the voice of our era, many of our eras, the Moody Blues, the Blue Jays, War of the Worlds, MTV star, sex symbol, you think?
I'm not going to touch that.
Come on. Justin Hayward joins us. Justin, but I can I call you Justin or just, I mean, it's you've got a new title.
No, what do you mean a new? I was in the investiture. Do you mean the OBE?
Yes.
Is that yes?
How am I to refer to you?
No, you refer to me as you've always referred to me as Justin.
No, but you it wasn't a knighting ceremony with the King of England, but it was a ceremony of some kind.
Yes, it was an investiture, and I was awarded the Officer of the Order of the British Empire by our late Queen.
Oh.
And then I didn't have time, because I was on the road, to do the actual medal ceremony before she died, before she passed. And so it was the King who did the, and King Charles, who became King Charles after Queen Elizabeth. Who did the investiture. So I went to Windsor and with my grandson, and we did the, and I met King Charles, and he gave me the medal of the Order of the Officer of the British Empire, yeah, the OBE.
Has it changed anything? Does your family treat you differently?
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Were you nervous for something like that? I mean, you were a hippie, you were a anti-establishment kind of guy at one point. Is it weird to be standing there with royalty?
I'm not sure that I was ever anti-royalty.
I didn't say anti-royalty, but, you know, rock and roll by its nature is kind of anti-establishment.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So would I consider the royalty establishment? I don't know. We separated church and state a long time ago.
Were you nervous?
No. It was a day of the investiture at Windsor Castle when I met the King and he gave me the medal. Of the order was the kindest day I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
And the policeman outside who knew who I was, hello, Justin, you know, like a London policeman outside Windsor Castle. And to everybody I met that day, I wish I could have brought every tour manager I've ever worked with to show them how kindness is done.
Yeah.
And everybody knew everything about me. I was kind of expecting that thing where, like you have, where, oh, my God, I'm told you're a DJ, you know, and then you have to kind of explain yourself.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to do any of that.
Kindness is something we don't seem to be able to do very well, Justin, anymore. Kindness and sweetness and innocence, G-rated movies, that kind of a thing. Do you miss a world that was a little more gentle?
No, I don't miss anything. I like now.
Yeah.
I like now.
You're on tour right now. You seem to tour without end.
Yes.
And you love it? You must love it.
Well, it's what happens is I end up saying yes. You know, I'm offered certain things, and I think, oh, that'll be quite good. Like right now, I'm in Atlanta, and I think when it came up, I thought, yeah, it'd be quite nice to be in Atlanta. So I said yes, and I'm very glad I did.
For you, it's about the dressing rooms, which I always found hilarious. That's what the bandmates told me. That's what your managers have told me. You know, from you see cities through a dressing room, right? I mean, you spend a lot of time there waiting, and you do your sound check, and you wait there. And so a dressing room matters to you.
Yes. And I think if people say, do you remember a certain gig? And I always think, well, if you could describe the dressing room,
yeah,
I could certainly remember it. But the Manco, there is a time, you know very well, there's a time in the day at 5:30 when I'm sitting in the dressing room with, and somebody's written Lemmy as it was here on the wall, you know.
Yeah.
What on earth am I doing? But about 8 o'clock, it gets better.
You
have a lovely evening.
You are going to be touring all of these cities. You're everywhere. And WGN is all of these places. It's a huge station. So what is your website if people want to see Justin Hayward and experience a night with you?
Oh, very simple, justinhayward.com,
yeah.
Yes.
And you do a lot of Moody Blues stuff. You do your solo stuff. You do Blue Jay stuff. And you do new stuff.
Yes. Yes, exactly. In my show, and I'm very fortunate to have enough material. It's kind of not what I play; it's what I leave out. And every time I do rehearsals with my little people, my little gang, and I say, "Well, I'd like to do so and so song," which was on Moody Blues album or something like that, or solo. And they always go, "Oh, great, fantastic!" And I say, "Yes, but it means we're going to have to drop this and that," and that they go, "Oh no, oh, I love that." So now we're doing probably a show with too many things. We're trying to get crammed too many things in that I honestly wouldn't know what we would leave out.
Well, there are seven Moody Blues records that I consider the greatest catalog of any band of all time, and you know that. And when I tell you this, you kind of shrug because you don't take compliments very well. You're a very humble guy. Interesting to me, and I had to go back and rediscover all this at a certain point. You started with the band the year I was born, but I didn't really come to know the Moody Blues, and I've fallen in love with all of it, but I didn't really get acquainted with you until the 80s. I met you first in 84, and I find it interesting that you've picked a song now to cover, and you don't do covers. You picked a song from 85.
I did, yes. And, Mike Batt and myself... Mike and myself are friends, so we see each other socially and speak on the phone quite a bit. And we did an album together in the 80s. It was called Classic Blue, in conjunction with the London Philharmonic, where we, between all of us, we chose some songs that popular songs that would lend themselves to an orchestral treatment. And then we had the opportunity again last year just to do one session, a 3-hour session. And Mike and I thought, what would we do? And then, well, we thought of the three songs and Life in a Northern Town.
There we go. We're gonna play the song.
One of those.
I can't wait. We're gonna have the radio debut here of this new song. It's already blown up Spotify. A song by Dream Academy. You know, this was your era of Wildest Dreams, and I know you're out there somewhere. This was a competitor. This song. This went after your kind of sound.
Oh, you think?
Don't you? Baroque pop?
Is it? It's not a competition, you know.
No. Did you love the song then?
I was aware of it.
Yeah,
I was aware of it and liked it.
All right, we're gonna.
I know Mike had a real fondness for it.
We're gonna play it here coming up. This is great. I'm Man Cow. This is the legend Justin Hayward, Moody Blues, and so many other great songs that you love. They've become part of our fabric. And we're going to return with him on the road here shortly on WGN Radio 720. How about that? Wildest Dreams. I'm Man Cal. We're back with Justin Hayward, WGN Radio here. And what a great honor to have him. And that was the beginning for me. That was it. You know, I knew about the Kinks and the Stones and the Who, but they're 80s music. And then I went back. And it's the same for me with the Moody Blues. Now, Justin, you don't do covers. You've never done covers. Now you're covering a song. We're going to play it here. World debut. At least radio debut, Life in a Northern Town. You know it was produced by David Gilmour of Pink Floyd.
I learned that afterwards.
Yeah, and you know it was written on Nick Drake's guitar. He was dead a decade when the guy picked up the guitar and wrote this.
I did not know that.
Do you know the original name of the song?
No, I've got to.
Okay, well, I'm gonna share something with you. So getting ready to come talk to you, I put it on Spotify, and your voice, it's just the most beautiful voice to me. And it still cuts through. And I can see, you know, he cringes whenever he hears this. I'm not hitting on you. The voice just cuts through. And
you're good.
And you said, you sing Morning Lasted All Day.
Yes.
All day. And all day. It cut through me. It cut through me when you sang it. Because I do remember those days when mornings lasted all day. And life seems to be getting quicker and quicker. And these days just fly by. And I remember a time. Mm-hmm. When Mornings Flew By, and that was the original name of the song. Mornings Lasted All Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Paul Simon heard the song, loved the song, and said it's not a good title. And he renamed it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure whether I wasn't sure whether I was qualified to actually sing this song because I wasn't from the North. I'm a southern guy, but I can tell you that once Mike had and I had decided with the London Philharmonic a few weeks before that we were going to do this as one of the songs that we were going to record, I didn't listen to the original again.
Yeah.
I just did the vocal from my memory of it instead of checking exactly the Dream Academy phrasing and all of that kind of stuff. I just did my own. I didn't listen to it again. I just did the vocal from my own impression of that song, and it seemed to work.
It's a great pop song. And was it tough for you to make the transition to writing pop songs? The original version of the band was they were long songs, concept albums, and then you went to writing hits. You really saved the band, and I wouldn't know about the band if it was not for you because you were able to write songs for this new era, this crazy new era of the 80s. Was it a tough transition for you, Justin?
Well, I think we put our the unfortunate thing for us was that Decca had been sold, and Decca was a wonderful record company in the days when record companies had their own studios, and that meant a lot. So many artists were given an opportunity, and like us, to record in their own Decca studios. But that era moved on, and I think I felt that we needed someone to bring us together, a producer. And so Pip Williams did the album with the voice on, I can't remember the title, A Long Distance Voyager.
Yeah, great album.
And then I met Tony Visconti, and we did a project for the BBC, actually. And we got on so well, I thought Tony is the right guy to pull us together.
Pull you into the 80s and shorten everything and write pop songs.
Yeah.
And are you sick of writing love songs? You write love songs.
Well, I fall in love with so many people in everyday life, just around me. Yeah.
The song, we're going to play it here. The song talks about Vietnam, the Beatles. You knew the Beatles and Frank Sinatra. Did you ever meet? I know you had the same manager as Frank Sinatra. Did you ever meet Frank Sinatra?
No, this is a question, but this is something I always have to say because I was in his company. Now, is that the same as knowing somebody or meeting somebody? I was in his company and at a benefit, actually, in Los Angeles. And he was absolutely charming. But I never got Frank Sinatra until I saw him live.
Yeah.
And then I realized, he really is the guy in these songs. And then I went out and bought the records, 40 years too late. But I got them and I got it.
Your manager told me a great story about Sinatra was at this point, mid-70s, I guess, he wasn't drawing crowds. So they decided to put him with the biggest act on earth, which at that time was John Denver. And he just tells a story about Denver looking at Sinatra, or Sinatra looking at Denver, going, I don't get it. He just could not understand the appeal of John Denver. Do you think Sinatra would have understood your appeal? Did he ever cover any Moody Blues songs?
No, I don't think so. No, he never got right into that. And I think artists and singers, music is a precious thing. You have to handle it with care.
Yeah.
And I think later in his career, maybe he could have made better choices about songs. But I'm good with it. Like I say, the moment I saw him on stage.
You get it. The phrasing.
I got it. Totally.
Well, Justin, I mean, enough teasing. Let's get to this. Let's hear the new song. This is a treat because you don't do other people's songs. So this is a rare treat for you to do this. It's a great song. Everybody loves a song, I think, from the 80s. It's Life in a Northern Town. This is Justin Hayward, WGN Radio 720. Wow. And boom, great ending. Different ending than the original. Justin Hayward, brand new song, radio debut here on WGN. And more with the great man, Justin Hayward, coming up live with us on the road. We'll be right back. That is Knights in White Satin. That's Justin Hayward, the Moody Blues at that time. And he's with us live now. I'm Man Cow. This is WGN Radio 720. You were 17 when you wrote that?
19.
But a kid, you were certainly a star on MTV. You were the star of the videos. You're a good-looking guy. You're a good front man. Did you ever consider acting?
Would have loved to, yeah. People have to consider me for acting. I didn't.
So you would have done it?
But you would have done it, wouldn't you?
I did a little bit of
you
it.
You could have done
it. Who cares? But listen, was your your looks helped you, right? I mean, you think you know you're a good-looking guy. You were the front man of a rock band. You had long hair. Do you feel like a rock star? Did you feel like you were a rock star at that? Yeah.
We were never personalities or celebrities. We were never recognized. Nobody ever knew who we were. When we played Madison Square Gardens, Ray and I went outside and gave away some tickets, and the people had no idea who we were until they went in and saw us, and they must have thought, oh, "This guy's that gave us the tickets." So there was never any problem like that. Fortunately, in the 1980s, we still looked good. You know, we were
you still
like
look good.
30s or 40s. We were still look good.
No, but you still 80s. Look good now, brother.
And I think it was we were lucky to have that moment the second time round, because I kind of missed it in the 60s. You know, I know I was there. But I've seen the photographs and I'm in them.
Yeah.
But I wasn't exactly present emotionally or chemically or mystically. You know, somehow I was missing.
Did you like that 80s era? Did you like the radio? Did you like the MTV hits?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. If I could only have one decade of music, it would be the 80s.
Wow.
When I look at my library, it's mostly the 80s stuff.
And your new song is a big 80s hit. It was, and you've redone it. It's on Spotify right now. And Life in a Northern Town. You're on tour again. You tour endlessly, it seems. You never stop touring. At one point, it was with orchestras and choirs and big bands. This is a pared down version. You must still enjoy it because you don't stop.
You know, I think that the show that I'm doing now is truer to the way that a lot of these songs, particularly the early Moody Blues things that I was on from those first albums, it's truer to the way they were recorded, where I'm playing them now. Because the one thing that was difficult, I think, for the Moodies was that we became two bands. We were a recording band with the Decca sound, the lovely stereo sound, and we became a touring band. I went from a 30-watt amplifier to a 50-watt to a 100-watt to 200-watt to 800-watts. And I think we became two different bands. We were a recording band and then a very different sounding touring band where I was playing all the acoustic guitar parts on an electric guitar real loud. And it kind of worked. But I think the show that I'm doing now with Mike Dawes, Carmen Gould and Julie Reagan's is truer to the original recordings. If you listen to them, the original recordings had the acoustic guitar up front and the percussion laying on top of that. And of course, Mike Pinder's wonderful Mellotron layers over the top. And I have those back with Julie Reagan's. You know, she's got all of those sounds on file. And I kind of think I'm truer to the records now than I ever was with a big loud stage production.
I notice that you talk now. With the Moodies, it was mostly the others that talked. Now you're talking and you're telling stories, and you're good at it. Do you enjoy that part of it?
I enjoy that part in an evening. Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I enjoy that part of an evening when a kind of an audience is waiting for me to say something. And, you know, yes, we've had three songs to start off the show. And then there's a pause, and then the audience is waiting. And they're waiting to hear some kind of identification from me as a person about the songs that we've just, the first three songs that I've just done on stage. And that's always good fun, that anticipation and... hey man, for someone like me, audiences are so respectful.
Yeah,
they're so respectful and listening and paying attention, man. It's like school, you know. Are you at the back? Are you paying attention?
You're playing some great theaters coming up, and again, you're everywhere. This radio station has a huge footprint, so I hope people go to see you. And The Voice Live is incredible. Your voice, and you have a lot of great Chicago memories. Do you have anything specific? Is there any great venue, great gig that you remember from Chicago?
Yes. Now, I think it was called like the no, the first gig we ever did, it was like Psychedelic Supermarket or something like that. It was a club, and we were everybody's support band. We were never top of the bill, so we could be back in the hotel by 9 o'clock. It was great. So we were the opening act for a lot of people. But I do remember that one of our roadies, the first gig in Chicago, just a bit, hey, listen, just for someone like me who's rock and roll heroes and musical heroes, we're all American, apart from Cliff and the Shadows, always got to give them credit, and Marty Wilde. But just to be in Chicago's sort of legendary music place was wonderful. But the first club we played there had psychedelic something it was called, but it had strobe lighting, and I know one of our roadies was completely went had some kind of seizure
Wow.
with the strobes, because often a light show was actually the top of the bill, a psychedelic light show, and people would get really into it and like, oh, and disappear into that kind of feeling. But it was tough, Hankow.
When you
America's a tough place if you haven't got any money, and we didn't have any money for the first few
But
years.
that changed. I mean, but Chicago was a great town for you. You look forward to Chicago.
It was wonderful. But maybe the second place we landed in Minneapolis, we opened for Tiny Tim,
Oh my God.
which was great. Yes.
Don't tell anybody else that. Open for Tiny
And
Tim.
who was a lovely, lovely, lovely man. And he really was. He wasn't pretending. He wasn't acting when he
Tiptoe
was
through the
Tiny
tulips.
Tim.
He died.
Yes.
He died on stage. He died performing on stage.
Would that how you'd have wanted it,
All
probably?
right, we're going to be right back, and I love this. This is what a great guy. Justin Hayward, Hall of Fame, the Blue Jays, War of the Worlds, new music out right now and on tour everywhere we are. And we'll be right back. WGN Radio 720. All right, I'm Mancal. That's newer music from Justin Hayward. He's still at it. The voice of the Moody Blues and a lot of great music in our lives. WGN Radio 720. We're going to wrap it up here shortly, just a few more minutes, and it's not enough time. I demand another hour. So we talked about you hanging out with the King and the Hall of Fame and all of that stuff. But is that important to you? What's important to you? What was an important moment that I may have missed?
The Simpsons. We were on The Simpsons.
I remember.
And yes, and that was something that kind of went around the world. And it was when we were asked to do it, we weren't told by Matt Groening what the story was. We had to wait until the episode came out to learn what the story was about. We knew our lines that we were to speak. And then my daughter saw it first, actually. She was at UCLA, and she saw it came on the TV. It was that Ned and Homer went to Las Vegas. And we weren't actually, we featured in it. And I think Matt told us that, Homer was possibly a Moody Blues fan. So that's how it
So
came.
that's the highlight.
Yes.
Justin Hayward and the Moody Blues on The Simpsons.
Yes.
Timothy Chalamet, my kids, all the young girls love this Timothy Chalamet guy. He's a big star. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's in that Hot Chanel ad with your music playing. New Generations. I see so many movies with your music. Let me ask you something really crude here. You make a lot of money, don't you? Movie music is money, right?
I wish. I
Come on.
wish. It was part of the first batch of songs, the first 8 years of my songwriting career, where I hadn't learned the ropes about
Now,
how to
how to protect
protect it.
your property. Do you get a kick out of seeing movies when the Moody Blues come on?
Sometimes it really works. I mean, obviously, Nights in White Satin is one that is used in movies a lot, and I think Scorsese has used it a couple of times. The only one that my wife and I sat down to watch was A Bronx Tale,
Yeah.
but I'm not sure I'd ever seen that before. And man, it was pretty violent. You know,
Yeah.
sometimes the juxtaposition of something beautiful like and soft like Nights in White Satin is put to sort of contrast some this kind of other violent act. My favorite, though, was actually in the movie Casino, when Joe Pesci and Sharon Stone were feeling intimate with
enjoying each other.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And that was a, I thought that was a lovely use.
And one of the Karate Kids movies, right? There's a new Karate Kid movie coming out, but you did music before for one of the Karate Kid movies.
Yeah, Jerry Weintraub. You mentioned Jerry Weintraub, our manager, late manager. Yeah.
I want to ask you this. It's heavy, but you know, you're a great poet, great artist, really such a soundtrack to our lives. You were the last hired to the Moody Blues. You'll probably be the last Moody living. Is that hard for you to wrap your mind around?
Well, I've got no idea whether that's going to be true or not. I don't know. But
is it shocking? You know, we lost Pinder recently. I mean, I knew all those guys as you did. I interviewed them over the years. Is it hard to imagine being on tour right now and your brothers at arms are no longer around? Is that?
I live it all through the music, not particularly through the people. And just because people are in a band together, it doesn't mean to say that they're close emotionally as friends.
That's right.
You know, and there is a difference.
You were very different people.
Family is what really matters. And family and really close friends are what really matter.
You've had a career my entire life, as I said. Is it what you thought it would be?
Oh, no plan, no strategy, ever. You know, so a lot of wonderful things happen to us and to me, and you could not have planned it
any
other way. It's just certain things happened, and we had nothing. And then our ambition was to get a van that we could drive around in. But I do think that when John and I came to the band in 66, so the band had been going about a year before that, and I think we became the band that the other three had always wanted to be in, which was really nice. You know, within a few weeks, I could see the other three guys going, oh, this is what I really wanted. You know, the five that we came, John, myself, Graham, Ray, and Mike.
The average career is 7 years in this business.
Oh, is it?
The average career, about 7 years. A couple of years to get going. You have a few years of fame, and then you try to hang on for a few more years before you call it quits. Most of those bands from the 80s, you're still here. They're not around anymore. You've just covered Dream Academy's Life in a Northern Town. Is Dream Academy still around?
I'm sure they're doing something good.
I'm sure they're great. But, I mean, can you believe you're still around? Is it pinch me time? Is it gravy at this point? What do you think of this point of your career?
I like now.
Are you happier now?
Happy. Happiness is something that's... is there a moment when we can stop and say, now I'm happy? I like now. I like the stuff. I like the people that are around me now, the tour manager that I have and the crew and the front of house guy and the guitar tech. And, of course, you know, Julie Reagan's who keyboard's got the voice of an angel.
Yeah.
And
I'm
enjoying it now.
Are you enjoying this?
Yes. Hey, yes.
Okay.
Of course. I'm very flattered that anybody wants to talk to me about music.
I don't know if it's humility. I don't know what it is. You always seem uncomfortable talking about you. You would prefer not talking about you. I've always felt that way. That you have to do this. This is a necessary evil. You want people to know you're on tour. You want people to know you have new music. But you really don't like sitting talking about you. You'd be fine not talking about the band or you again, wouldn't you?
No.
It's the great John Anderson line from Yes, don't surround yourself with yourself. You seem like a guy that wants less of you and more of others.
Do I?
Am I wrong?
I'm having to consider these things that you're saying.
I think you've done the star thing and you're kind of over it. And now it's about the poetry and the music and your bandmates. And you've always sung about love and love.
Yes, because that's what has been the most important thing in my life. People that I love and people that I have loved. People that I've left, you know, and left me. But it is about songs. Can you imagine a life without music?
No.
You know, it's impossible, isn't it?
And thank you for the music and thank you for the soundtrack to my life. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Always a joy, and I wish you great things on this tour. And you said it's all about love. What's number one in your life as far as love goes?
Family.
Family. Justin Hayward, the Moody Blues, on tour, new music out on Spotify. Check it out. I'm the Man Count. Justin, thank you. WGN Radio 720.